How's it going, everyone? Welcome to the fifth episode of Pundits of Pioneer. I'm one of your hosts, Brandon Pearson, and joining me on the other line is Slater Claudel. How's it going, Slater?
Good, how are you?
I'm doing all right. I was pretty hyped this past weekend to watch a lot of coverage of the Star City Games Invitational, and I actually got to play a few leagues myself, so I've been enjoying Pioneer a lot, and I think the format's really sweet. How about you?
Yeah, I've been having a blast playing the format and watching the Invitational last weekend. And speaking of which, we have a special guest today with us, Kellen Pastor. How are you doing, Kellen?
I'm doing all right. Glad to be on the show.
Glad to have you. Do you want to just give us a little background about you and where you come from, maybe?
Sure. So I've been playing Magic since Time Spiral Block, roughly. I played a little bit before then, but I didn't know what the sets were back then. And I've been playing competitively for 8 years, I would say. 2011, I played in my first Nationals, I think.
What format was that?
That was one of the Core Set drafts and Stoneblade Standard.
Ooh, Stoneblade Standard.
Okay. That sounds gross.
I got lucky where I wasn't spending money on Magic at that point, but a friend didn't show up to regionals and lent me his Stoneblade deck, and I made top 8, so I qualified for Nationals, which was pretty nice.
Oh, wow. That's sweet.
Nice.
Back when Nationals was pretty much a pro tour, right?
Again, I wasn't really connected into the bigger scene at that point, so I was excited to go, but I didn't really think of it as a pro tour.
Yeah, but you did have to at least top 8 at regionals in order to go, right?
Or win a local store event, or have an Elo rating pretty high, maybe back then. I don't know if Elo still counted back then.
Okay, cool. So 2011, 8 years, and then what have you done since?
So I've top 8ed, although one of them's a team top 4, 3 GPs, one SCG Open, top 8ed, I think 3 others. I didn't really keep count. Hit platinum level this past year.
Congrats.
Congrats, that's awesome.
Yeah, well,
it was a year not to hit it, but if it was a year earlier, maybe it'd been a little better, but yeah.
A year earlier might have been a very large amount of money. This year, it was 6,000.
Yeah, I guess a year earlier could have possibly qualified MPL.
A year earlier, it might have been literally 6 figures worth of value. I was borderline platinum, so.
Yeah.
But I also, at the beginning of 2018, I had 0 pro points, just to give you an idea of
Wow, that's quite a run.
I might have had 8. I was bronze, but I didn't earn. I had a psych ward 0 pro points in the first quarter of 2018. I might have showed up to 1 GP.
Fair.
Yeah.
So I guess I should ask you this question: what brought you to the SCG Invitational this past weekend? Is the SCG circuit something that you like to put a focus on, or do you really only try to qualify for the Invitationals and maybe try to stick more towards Grand Prix, or do you do more online play?
So I just kind of show up to tournaments I want to show up to, unless I get to a point where it's there's a lot of value in me showing up to this other tournament for whatever reason. For SCGs, I quite enjoy team events, and sometimes they have tournaments in Valley Forge, and I live outside of Philadelphia, so I don't have to get a hotel. So I go to those. I've been fortunate enough to, just from the team events and the Phillies, I've been able to qualify for the Invitational. I had to play a Classic, unfortunately, this past season. Was not doing super hot, but I top-8ed the Classic and was able to qualify. I paired against a friend, and he beat me because I was already qualified off the points from top eating the Envy, the Classic. I already had enough points to get to the Invitational. So, I didn't particularly grind. I was going to try to get to the Invitational, but I was going to just try to play local IQs. There's a bunch of them in the, in the greater Philadelphia area, Pennsylvania, New Jersey, that sort of stuff.
That's good. We were talking last podcast that we don't have any of those up here in Maine. a little hard to get to the Invitational that way for us.
Yeah, I hear that's like one of the best ways to get to the Invitational is just grinding IQs, which kind of sucks.
I mean, if you just show up to like opens regularly, you'll get qualified, but that's also a lot of money. One of the IQs I went to was only like 30 some people. Sorry, I said one. The only IQ I went to was 30 some people. And, but some of those people are grinding the SCG circuit, so you can't like, it's not necessarily easy because they're going to try to beat you even if they're already qualified.
Right, because all leaderboard points are so important.
Yeah. It's a lot of work to do well in that circuit.
Yeah, it seems like a lot of time, a lot of, I mean, it seems like even more time than like the old pro point system for silver, bronze, gold.
I think it depended on the year, but like if you're trying to hit the higher levels like gold or plat in 2018, I think it was less time than trying to make the players championship in SCG this year as a comparison level.
Is that because there was like 65 GPs versus like 48 GPs or
the GP cap?
Oh, because they got, yeah, they added the GP cap in 2018. Yeah. Yeah,
and you didn't have to play like the equivalent of PPTQs you weren't allowed to play in, instead of you had to play them to get extra points. SCG, everything can give you points. Whenever you scrub out of an event, you have to go play the classic the next day if you want to like potentially get points out of the weekend. And I know like some people can get frustrated where like they do well, they end up top 16, and then they lose points in the race because somebody else played a classic, got scooped. Sometimes people in the top 8 of classics won't, after they split and they don't care about the points because they're ready to invite, will just concede to people actually like trying to make it to the players championship.
Yeah.
So
the classics, top 8 already qualifies you for the Invitational. That's all they need. That's all they needed. So at that point, the extra points don't really matter to them.
Top 4 qualifies for the Invitational.
Oh, top 4 only? Okay.
Yeah. But yeah, once you make top 4, there's not even like money. It's like their prize picks. So it's not, those aren't always played out to the to determine an actual winner. Not sometimes they are. It's not 100%, but
fair. Yeah.
All right. So Kellen, I kind of want to ask you, so kind of up to this point, what have been your general thoughts on Pioneer? What have been some decks that you've been toying around with, and what kind of led you to your deck choice coming up to this Invitational weekend?
So, I did very little Pioneer testing until the week of the Invitational because I was qualified for Richmond, and Richmond was of much greater importance to me than the Invitational because I was live for Rivals League, didn't quite get there, but I was really trying to make a push for that. I did play a couple Pioneer events before then. I tried out Mono Green Ramp a little bit. That deck was a little too inconsistent. I found that if you went you couldn't mulligan because then you wouldn't have enough lands. And if you didn't have Arboreal Grazer, it felt like you were too slow even against like non-aggressive decks. So I kind of like didn't like that deck. And I also tried out Mono Red Devotion because Slater actually showed it to me. And that deck was sweet, but it was
underpowered.
You're playing a lot of bad cards.
A lot of bad cards.
Yeah, yeah.
And like early on, you can kind of get away with that. But I think now you can't.
I mean, yeah, well, now that the deck lists are so in tune, like even like the Sultai list and so many of like the ramp decks and the aggro decks, they're so streamlined now that, I mean, yeah, you really can't get away with playing duds.
I actually think, I'll talk about it a little bit later, but I have some thoughts on that deck now that some bans have happened and the format's shaken out to be mono green and mono black, but I'll talk about it a little bit. So you tried mono red, you tried mono green. What else did you end up going with?
So I tried those before all the bans came in, and then I waited until Monday where they announced the Veil Summer ban. And then I tried 4 different decks. The first one was I tried mono green ramp again. I went like 1-2 beating the mirror, and I was like, this, it clearly did not feel good enough to me. So I just dropped in the league at that point because I didn't have a ton of time. I tried out the blue-black Witch's Oven Prized Amalgam deck, and I went 0-2, and the deck didn't function in any of the games. And when it did kind of function, it felt worse than what my opponents were doing. So I decided that I wasn't going to put in time into a deck like that where maybe there's potential there, but I don't know how much work it's going to take to get there, and it isn't there now. Then I tried out the Goblin Lanar Elves aggro deck. I don't know if it's got a good name, but you know,
so it's Gruul aggro with it's Gruul aggro, right? With
It's Gruul aggro with
the equipment and the four copies of each of the Goblin
four bosses. I was playing Embercleave. I think I also had like one Goreclaim Rampager in my deck because I really like that card.
Double strike trample.
Goreclaim Rampagers +4/+4.
Yeah, with Embercleave though, it's
Blood Rush. Combo. Yeah, and Embercleave, you get the double strike. You already have trample, but +4/+4 is still very good with Embercleave.
Yeah.
And it's easy to play both of them in the same turn in terms of total number of mana, although getting three red mana is not trivial in the deck. So I played that. I went 5-0 in my first league, and I was like, all right, this is pretty good. But then I also tested out the next league. I tested out the PTQ winning mono blacklist. Although I was kind of lazy and I didn't actually buy the Kalitas's for the sideboard, so I ran with a 13 card sideboard. And I also went 5-0 with that. So at that point, I decided I don't have a lot of time left. This might have been Tuesday at some point. I'm like, I'm locking in one of these two decks. I ran three more leagues, one with the green red deck. I went 2-3, and two with the mono black one, where I went a combined 7-3. The mono black deck just felt a little bit better to me. I thought there's too many matchups where the goblins weren't good, and when the goblins weren't good, the green red deck wasn't good. So I feel like that's more of a meta call deck than a generically good deck. While mono black seemed to have tools for every matchup, mostly because you get to play four Thoughtseize, which is very good. And the fact that it had a very strong proactive plan meant that, like, even if there's something I wasn't quite prepared for, I could still just beat them down.
And you also mentioned your play style a little bit.
Yeah, so I play almost entirely aggro decks in every format. I'll make exceptions when I need to, but for the most part, like, I played White Weenie in two Mythic Championships in a row, and I was literally mono-white. I played that in the last Winter's Invitational. I played it in one of the SCG team opens. I played Humans in Barcelona, then Burn. Sorry, Humans in London, Burn in Barcelona. I did play Oko in Richmond, but if you just look at my deck choices over the years, you'll see I try to stick to aggro archetypes. Almost entirely because I have more fun with them.
That's fair. You like to turn creatures sideways and kill your opponent.
I do.
Now, do you think it's more like, do you think that you give up much equity by picking all these aggro decks, or do you think you actually gain some amount of equity because you're playing a deck that you find enjoyable and fun?
I'm gaining life equity. I know that. In terms of tournament equity, if I feel I am losing enough tournament equity, I'll change my mind about playing aggro like I did in Richmond. I considered a lot of aggro decks. All of them were terrible against the food decks, so I said I can't play these, and I just registered food. I'm willing to play a White Weenie deck. Like, I'm willing to play aggro decks when I don't think they're the best deck in the format. Like, at both the Invitationals, before this one, I played White Weenie in Standard, and in the second one in the summer, I didn't think White Weenie was the best deck that I could be playing in that format, but I knew I like played it pretty well, and I played it a bunch, so I was still willing to play with it. I didn't think I was giving up, even though I didn't think it was the best choice, I didn't think I was giving up enough equity for me to switch off of it. In comparison to, again, Richmond, where I felt if I wasn't playing food, I was going to be like such a huge dog to the field that I'd be giving up too much equity and not having any fun, because I don't mind being a little bit behind. I do mind being heavily behind.
Yeah.
So there's a breaking point. My breaking point's further out than it would be for most people. So if I'm just think I'm a little bit worse, I'll still play aggro. If I think I'm much worse, I won't.
Definitely saves you a lot of mental energy between, like, having extra time between rounds, not constantly going or even like approaching the draw bracket. Hopefully
I have not gotten a draw in years. except for team formats, but it wasn't my match ever.
Did you get any draws during Richmond?
I did not go to turns, no.
Yeah, and I know so. that tournament specifically set records for the amount of draws it had since, I don't know, years.
It did. And I was there. It was taking a long time between rounds. I'm a faster player than most, and I did play a lot of the food deck before the tournament started, so I was able to get through my rounds pretty fast, even when I started playing mirrors. You just have to kind of make decisions, and sometimes you're not making the right decision, but the upside to not making the right decision is that you don't get a draw, and draws are not great if you're trying to win tournaments. So I thought you just kind of have to like suck it up. The issue comes when your opponent decides that they're going to take forever, and then you feel like you have to play even faster to avoid the draw, and then that doesn't come up much, though.
That's fair. How many mirrors did you play in Richmond, by the way?
I played 4 Nissa mirrors, and I played the Sultai Trail of Chrome deck twice.
That Sultai Trail of Chrome deck definitely was a breakout deck of that weekend.
Yes. I was like, felt a little bad for my second opponent, because I'd already played against him once, so I knew all the play patterns, even though, like, off of that one match, I saw all the play patterns, so I was like, okay, I know what your deck does, and then I was able to, nothing was a surprise. I knew, like, oh, this is how Massacre Girl works, this is what you're trying to do, this is what I need to target. I also already knew, you kill the ovens as soon as you can.
Yeah.
So, kind of just, before we get into your tournament specifically, I wanted to kind of take a look at your deck, because one thing I'm noticing when I'm looking over your deck list and the first place for the PTQ is that your main deck is very similar, almost identical to the PTQ winning deck list. You have one extra cast down. But what is a big difference is the sideboard. And one card that Slater and I were talking about last week as being a card that, you know, could really be great going into the Invitational was Blight Beetle, and you're playing 3 Blight Beetle. How often were you playing against the Lotus Box team that they all brought the scales? And did you get to play much with Blight Beetle, and did that come up a lot in your games?
I played against Xan online, and I drew a Blight Beetle and did nothing because he Fatal Push. He had to play Fatal Push on it. I won the game anyways, and the fact that, like, their scales deck needs to kill Blight Beetle or not do anything is relevant. However, it's less a hate card for scales, and it's more a hate card for Mono Green Devotion. That's actually, like, you guys think Mono Green Devotion is one of the best decks in the format, right?
Yeah, definitely.
Yes.
Yeah, I think it's unplayable.
That's fair.
Blight Beetle.
It can't be Blight Beetle, right?
It can't.
How many things can you list off the things that beats a Mono Green? Starting with Vivian.
Jade Light Ranger, Walking Ballista, Vivian, Voracious Hydra. And I think that's it, but I named all their good cards.
It yeah, doesn't. The rest of the deck's just Mana Dorks and, like.
Mana Dorks.
Oh, it shuts off. It shuts off the Monstrous Hydra there, too, if they play it. I mean, I think a lot of people just playing Voracious Hydra could just better.
Yeah. The list I was looking at. Oh, they also have Scooze. It turns off Scooze as well. And I was looking at their sideboards. Some people have a Hornet Queen. Ulamog's not really playable. I mean, you could board in Ulamog.
Deal with Blight Beetle.
Yeah, but the issue is even with Vivian, you can't ever tutor anything up because the Blight Beetle can just ping it one at a time. And your biggest creature is probably going to be a 2-2 if Blight Beetle's in play. So it's not like you have good blocks against my other creatures either. That matchup's kind of a joke post-board.
And they have actual 0 ways to kill it unless they have a Blister on the battlefield?
Yeah, and since you run 4 Fatal Push and stuff like that, and you can, like, keep in Thoughtseize, they never do.
So run down your 15-card sideboard. You had 2 Dress, 2 Fourth Bridge, Prowler, 3 Blight Beetle. Were you going to say something about the Prowler?
Oh, the Fourth Bridge Prowler was very good for me the entire weekend.
I was going to run down the list and ask what your MVP was. So, 3 Blight Beetle, 2 Legion's End, 3 Noxious Grasp, one Ashiok and two Kalidus out of these 15 or out of these cards. Which one was your MVP on the weekend?
Fourth Bridge Prowler.
And you had none in your main deck and two in the sideboard?
Yeah. So I didn't know that card existed until the morning of when I was talking to my friend Evan Buckles. And he like showed me that he was playing it in his sideboard. And I was like, that seems way better than Disfigure. Because I've had issues where you board in a lot of removal spells and then you don't have something to crew Copter or you don't have enough creatures to feed to Scryfeep Scrounger. And everything I wanted to kill was one toughness except for Goblin Rabblemaster and Legion Warboss. Almost every other target for my Disfigure was a one toughness, like either a one drop out of Mono Black or the one drops out of Blue Red and Soul or an Elf. And so Fourth Rich Valor just seemed like a natural switch. And it played out very well. Allows you to steal the initiative a lot of times. Where they go turn one Elf, you go turn one Fourth Rich Prowler, and then the disadvantage of being on the draw kind of goes away.
Yeah, definitely. Just stealing the set.
Yep.
How was Ashiok? That seems like a really interesting choice in your sideboard. Did you get to play it much, bring it in, and have it perform?
I never tested it before the Invitational. I played against Bantfield once. I didn't draw it. I don't have a lot to say on it. It seems fine. A lot of people are playing Hour of Promise.
Field decks.
Yeah, it's not very good if they're not. It's also pseudo graveyard hate in case there was like some broken graveyard deck that I didn't know about. But I don't think there is. So I probably wouldn't play it if I was playing the deck again. I think like a Duress effect's better against the Vant decks, and I'll need to play against the green black Hour of Promise deck to see how it plays to really know what I would want to do against them.
Okay, definitely. Yeah. So why don't you kind of take us through your tournament as far as what were the different decks that you played against? What was your record? What was your overall finish? I know that part of this tournament was a split format. So you also were playing, I believe you played Eldrazi Tron in Modern. So, yes. You know, you had another kind of tournament to be playing alongside that. But how did you finish up? What were the decks that you played against? And, you know, where did you shake out?
So I ended up in ninth and I went 7-1 in Pioneer and I went 5-3 in Modern. In Pioneer, I only lost the mirror. Let me see if I can remember what I played against. I played against Mono Green Devotion once, Scales once, Bant Field once, the Green Red aggro deck with the Rabble Masters. I played against that. I played against Blue Red and Soul twice, the mirror, and I might not be able to remember what my last opponent was on Blue White Flash. And that's all of the eight decks. And again, I lost the mirror to the actual eventual champion, Chris. He played well. I mulled a 5-1, which was a little rough, and came up like pretty much a card short. And then game two, I think I did not play as well as I could have. And he didn't really give me the like gaps I would need to make up for my misplay. So,
did you win the die roll?
Yes, and I mulled a 5, which made up for. I'd rather be on the draw against an opponent on 5 than be on the play with 5. So,
would you also rather be on the draw against a Thoughtseize's opponent or?
No, not really.
I guess turn one Thoughtseize in your. On the play is just as good for you, I guess.
Yeah, he cast a Thoughtseize in game one and grabbed a good spell, which isn't like too surprising, but Thoughtseize is below average in the deck, and post board you take him out. And not good in the mirror, just like you empty your hands too fast and the damage matters.
Yeah, that's definitely good considerations. Was there anything in his sideboard that was more relevant for the mirror than
no. you had? I had Fourth Bridge Prowler, Kalitas, and Legion's End. He had one less. I had two Kalitas, two Legion's End. He had three Legion's End, one Kalitas. I like the fourth Witch Prowler. I think he gave me a slight edge in the mirror. But I don't think it was enough to really say there's a marked difference between us. It would be different if I had, like, Dark Betrayal. But that, I didn't think there's going to be enough mono black to play that card. So I didn't.
So, you know, I guess I should ask, because you did well with your deck. If you had to play this tournament again, would you run it back? Do you think, as, you know, what came out of the Invitational, do you think mono black is just, you know, solidly one of the best decks that you would have moving forward?
I think either mono black or the green black field deck were the two best decks that were played in the Invitational. I don't know if that's going to be true moving forward as people adjust to the field a little bit more. I think it was clear as I started playing that people weren't ready for the fact that black was playable again after the Veil ban. It seemed like a lot of people locked in their decks pre-ban were like, oh, this doesn't change which deck I can play, and didn't realize that the percentages had slipped so that if your opponent was playing black, they were just better against, like, every single green deck in the field. I know, like, some of the green decks weren't running Veil, but they only weren't running Veil because Veil pushed out the black decks. And, like, here, there was no more Veil, so the black decks weren't losing the early rounds to the opponents with Veil, so you're getting advantage by not having Veil in your deck later on. And, black just has the best one-man interaction in the format. And it gave me... I felt like I had a pretty large edge in almost all of my matchups.
Yeah, no, that makes a lot of sense considering how, you know, we've been praising the one-man interaction that these black decks have been having on the podcast the last few weeks. You know, even if you think you're weak to a specific archetype, or, you know, you're weak to some specific cards, you know, cards like Thoughtseize, you know, Duress out of the sideboard and Fatal Push shore up a lot of those inconsistencies around the board. So it makes sense how, you know, this mono black deck just has all the tools to kind of deal with anything that was currently being presented at the Invy.
Yeah, there's stuff that I would be, like, worried about, like, if people were playing a lot of Anger of the Gods or Cry of the Carnarium. But Phoenix players were the only one on those cards. And I haven't played with Phoenix, but it's my general understanding that that deck's a little underpowered for the format. But I'm not sure if that's right or not. That was just my impression from other players.
It seemed good in the first few weeks, but I haven't seen it as well.
Yeah, I think it was kind of overperforming in the first couple weeks just because I think where the format was at this point, kind of like how we were talking about earlier, a lot of these decks were a little bit untuned. And if you kind of look back at the history of these Phoenix deck lists, they actually haven't changed that much. A lot of people early on figured out that the Lightning Axe and Fiery Temper package was kind of where you wanted to be. And once that was figured out, you know, there's a kind of point where these Phoenix decks were just ahead of everyone else, but it seemed at this point everyone has their deckless tune. They're doing, you know, more powerful things, frankly, and they're doing it at a more consistent rate than Phoenix.
Yeah. It also seems to me like if your opponent can kill Thing in the Ice consistently, it's tough to apply pressure.
Certainly. Yeah.
We also talked about it after the Veil ban, and that Graveyard Hate would be stronger going into the Invitational weekend. And that deck's like Phoenix, Jeskai Ascendancy, and because Blue Green Nexus had just won a PTQ last weekend, the week before the Envy, and Graveyard Hate, like, helped slow down those decks. So I was wondering, with your mono black sideboard choices, you didn't want to know, you didn't want to look at the possibility of playing like Leyline of the Void or.
So Leyline of the Void's only good when the Graveyard Hate is like, you win the game. And against this mono black deck, if you're planning on playing a long drawn out game, Graveyard Hate can be good. Or if the Graveyard Hate's kind of free, like Scavenging Ooze. However, in the mirror, the games are a little bit grindier than you might think, but they're not so grindy that Leyline of the Void is worth being down a card. And the second one's really bad. And so at that point, when I was looking at the decks that I knew about, Is It Phoenix was the only one where I'd be like, yes, I want Leyline of the Void. And since my impression was that deck wasn't very strong, I just decided I didn't want any graveyard hate at all. And instead, I decided my hate card would be Blight Beetle. Because like I said, I don't think Mono Green Devotion can beat the card. And Scales can't beat the card unless they answer it. But they can answer it, so it's not as good.
So kind of going back to the sideboard, you know, with the Mono Black kind of having a surgence in the format and becoming more popular, is there any cards that you can think of off the top of your head that might be really good hosers in the sideboard, you know, for the mirror? I was personally thinking about maybe the 3-mana Liliana as being a possible card that I would look to if you're trying to outgrind your opponent. What do you think?
I think the 3-mana Liliana, Infernal Reckoning, and Dark Betrayal are all cards that I would test, as well as potentially playing more Kalitas. Dark Betrayal and Infernal Reckoning are just very efficient removal spells. 1 mana, they kill something. Infernal Reckoning gives you less targets, but it exiles Scrap Heap Scrounger, which is nice, and it gains you life, so it's good at racing. Dark Betrayal hits your opponent's Kalitas's for 1 mana, which can be a big deal because it can be nice. It can also be like you play your own Kalitas and you kill something for 1 mana, so that way you need 5 mana, you immediately get value, and the extra zombies, great. A 2/2 is a very relevant body against Mono Black. So those both have some nice play patterns to them. Liliana's the more powerful option than that. And it's possible if Liliana's good instead of Dark Betrayal, you actually want Liliana's Defeat, which is this. If people start playing Liliana, you might want to have that card in your sideboard as well. But I don't actually like it against not decks with one. I don't think it's what you want to be doing against control decks. I think it's just like too slow and dirty, and the individual creatures you're buying back, except for Rankle, aren't really worth buying back because they either come back or they're like 1/1s.
Right.
And so it's just like a slow, eventually ultimate card, and that's not what you want to be doing. Once it starts killing creatures, it's very good. But since I thought I had a better plan against most of the elf decks, and I didn't know how much of the mirror to expect because Mono Black popped up at the PTQ, and there's one copy of it there, and I didn't really know how popular it would be. So I just kind of didn't plan for the mirror at all.
Judging from my personal kind of look on the format, it seemed like a lot of people, when they saw this, you know, PTQ winning Mono Black deck, didn't actually take it seriously. And I don't think a lot of people actually took the time to really play with the deck and kind of figure how it fit in the format. I think a lot of people just kind of scoffed at it when they saw it won the PTQ.
Yeah, it's running cards that don't look great, like Night Market Lookout, and Bloodsoak Champion wasn't actually... It was good when I was in Standard, but it looks like a card that you think, like, oh, if this card was good, it would have dominated Standard, but the Khanz of Tarkir Standard period was very high power level, because remember, it overlapped with the fetches for a little bit, so you had
right.
That. And people were playing Siege Rhino, and Bloodsoak Champion does not line up well against Siege Rhino. So I think people weren't used to these sort of cards. It's another thing where, like, Smuggler's Copter is good, but in this Mono Black deck, it's the best card in your deck, while in most of the other decks of Smuggler's Copters, it's just, like, a below-average card in the deck that you play because you don't have better 2-drops in the format. Pioneer doesn't have a lot of strong 2-drops in general.
It was banned in Standard, though.
It was banned in Standard. And one of the reasons why it's banned, like, this has some of the synergies that you want to, like, actually made the red-black zombies deck in Standard, if you remember that, where you're, like, Cryptbreakering and discarding Fiery Temper and Haunted Dead and bringing back Prized Amalgams out of your straight red-black deck.
Yeah. And Haunted...
Haunted Dead. And in... That's the sort of stuff you want to be doing with Smuggler's Copter. You really want a way to turn your discard into an extra card or two over the course of the game. And with the Scrap Heap Scroungers and the Bloodsoak Champions...
That's... Gutterbones?
Yeah, the Gutterbones is terrible. don't play Gutterbones. I, like, didn't consider other options, but I think literally almost any spell is better than it. A 25th land, even though I don't think you really want to go to 25, would probably be better than Gutterbones. it doesn't crew copter. The tourney comes into play, and it's three mana to buy back at 2/1 instead of two mana like Bloodsoaked Champion and Scrapheap Scavenger. And the difference between 3 and 2 is huge, because it's the difference between being able to do that and play one drop on 3, or being able to do that twice on 4, or activate Mutavault and then do that. There's a lot of ways you can use that one mana in this deck, and you just can't do that with Gutterbones. So you almost never bring back Gutterbones.
So the mana base for this deck, do you want to kind of expand on it? Because that was something that Slater and I, you know, I was listening to last week's episode, and we actually talked for a while about the mana base in this deck. And while it may not be the sexiest looking mana base, it certainly is efficient and useful. Do you kind of want to speak more to that, Kellen?
Yeah. So you're running 24 lands in this deck, which is useful so that way you can curve up to your 4 drops. But that's also more lands than you typically play in a aggro deck. And for most aggro decks, if you draw 5 or 6 lands, it can be problematic, because that means you don't have enough spells. Fortunately, in this deck, 8 of your lands both come into play untapped, and they also have abilities to allow you to play longer the game. That's 4 Mutavault for Castle Lochleen. The Mutavaults are nice just because they poke in for damage a lot, trigger your Bloodsoaked Champions, crew your Smuggler's Copter. They do a lot of the dirty work that you need to win games when things aren't going perfectly.
The Castle Lochleen. You can sack as a zombie to Cletus.
You can. That's a synergy that doesn't come up often, but you do want to remember. You can also sack the vampire, because you can also sack vampires to Kalitas. Yeah, so you can sacrifice Knight of the Ebon Legion in case
that wasn't as relevant in that standard. Not a lot of vampires running around.
Yeah, it's not super. It's not that relevant, so a lot of people will forget, but you can get your opponents by attacking with the Kalitas to go like, oh, you don't have any zombies block, and then you sacrifice Knight of the Ebon Legion. The Castle Lochleen is actually the more important land. In some matchups, you're going to be bringing a lot of removal spells, and the issue is that you need to have some sort of card advantage engine in order to win these games once you bring in the removal spells, or else you're going to be like, I killed my opponent's stuff, but then I didn't apply any pressure, and then they just drew enough threats to beat me. Castle Lochleen is a land that is your card advantage engine. It allows you to take over the game over time, and it means that you can both be this aggressive role if you have like your one drops and go at them, or if you board into a bunch of noxious grass to go along with your fatal pushes and murderous riders, you can just become like a mid-range control deck and use Castle Lochleen to grind them out. And this versatility is one of the major strengths of this mono black aggro deck, and it's one that people might not realize because everyone's calling it mono black aggro, but you're really a mid-range deck. The deck's not actually that fast. And I think that versatility is one of the strengths of the deck that people might underrate until they've played it with it a little bit.
But the deck's still aggro enough to fit your play preference.
Yes, and the aggression is important against decks like Bant Field, where you actually need to clock them or else they're going to beat you. So, against some decks, the aggression is important. Against some decks, it's not as important.
Yeah, I was playing. Kind of the two main decks I've been playing lately have been the red-green aggro deck and then the blue-white control decks. And each time I notice that if I don't immediately have the Field of Ruin or I immediately don't, you know, nut draw them with Embercleave, the game usually gets to a stall point and then Castle Lochleen just kind of goes off and makes it so, you know, you just have this insurmountable card advantage engine, and so many of your cards just kind of get you more cards worth of value. So I really do like this deck, and I'm really glad that you pointed out how it's an aggro deck, but it really plays more like a mid-range deck with an aggressive slant to it.
Yeah, exactly. And I think because of that reason, it's going to move down in the metagame as people adjust to like what it's doing, but I don't think it's going to, unless they ban something, I think it can... this sort of strategy, maybe with some cards different in the future. I think it could be a long-term player.
Now, before we move on, I just want to ask you one more question about your main deck. What was the specific reason that you had an extra removal spell in the main deck in Cast Down? Were you just finding that you weren't able to kill enough things, or
it
were there...
It wasn't an extra removal spell.
Okay.
It was instead of the fourth Murderous Rider, and it was just to lower my curve by a small bit.
Okay, yep.
Grasp of Darkness is actually the better removal spell, but I was being a little cautious with my mana. I don't know if you actually want to cut a Murderous Rider. I don't know if you cut a Murderous Rider from cast down a Grasp of Darkness, or even Doomblade. Doomblade's another card you can play. So I'm not sure on that, but yeah, I just wanted to have a slightly lower curve. You have so much stuff to do with your mana that like three drops can be clunky.
Ultimate price as well.
There is ultimate price as well, yes.
Probably worse than Doomblade, unless you're playing a lot of mirrors.
Yeah, and in the mirror, since it hits copter, I'm not even sure if it's that much worse.
Okay. Interesting.
All right, thanks, Cullen, for explaining it to us, your Invitational Weekend. Okay. Moving into the next segment, we got Pioneer News. So this week, on Monday, we had no new bans, which means we have at least another week of playing with what came out of last weekend and our good friend Oko. And this coming Saturday is a Mox prelim, and it's going to be Pioneer. This is the first Mox prelim of the format. So I'm interested to see, I mean, you're going to have a lot of people that are like fighting for leaderboard points because we're getting pretty close to the end of the year, and there are still points up for grab to qualify for next year's or this year's Magic Online Championship rule. And then the other news announcement came in this past week's Modo announcement, and that is, or actually came 2 weeks ago. And next week is a week of Pioneer PTQs that are happening each day. So there's a link that if we haven't already tweeted out, we'll tweet out. So next week, you got PTQs every day starting on Monday. I'll just read them off in Eastern time, 8 a.m. Eastern on Monday, 12 noon on Tuesday, 6 p.m. on Wednesday, 9 a.m. on Thursday, 1 p.m. on Friday. It looks like there's two on Friday?
Yep.
There's one at 2 a.m., I guess, Saturday morning. And there's one at 10 a.m. on Saturday Eastern time. And then a final one on Sunday at 9 a.m., which is happening instead of the Pioneer Challenge of that week. So we're going to see a ton of Pioneer. I mean, we have at least 7 different or 8 different Pioneer PTQ winning deck lists to talk about the following weekend after Thanksgiving.
Next week's going to be busy.
If this doesn't tell us what needs to leave the format or stay in the format, I don't know what will.
Yeah, I mean, I can't wait. I mean, Do either of you know how many of these PTQs you're going to play in? Actually, Kellen, do you need to play in these PTQs?
I think they both qualified.
They announced at Richmond that due to I'm currently gold status, that I'm going to be qualified for Phoenix. So I am not allowed to play in the PTQs.
Gotcha. Well, I'm unlike not allowed you
to play them either. So it's up to you, Brandon.
Yeah, unlike you two, I will be playing many of these PTQs, as many as I can play, realistically. So... I mean, I personally am super excited for this. I love playing PTQs. I like paper PTQs, admittedly, a lot more than online PTQs. But when there's this many opportunities, I don't care. I will just play as many as I can. And so, like you said, Slater...
You should be able to find a time that works for you with all the different times that are starting.
Yeah, I'm looking at like 2 or 3 of them that look good for me. So, and to be honest, I stay up pretty late. Playing Magic, like most of my Magic playing is done past midnight, so some of the times on here that are bad for other people are actually kind of fine for me, so it really doesn't matter. But yeah, like you said, Slater, if something needs to leave or go in this format, it's going to be decided by this week. And I think, you know, this really isn't a hot take, but I think the format of Pioneer at the beginning of this week, towards the end of the week, is going to be a much different format. We're going to see, you know, these decks either, you're going to see winning deck lists kind of change from, you know, tournament to tournament. People that are doing a Wednesday tournament, they're going to be looking at the Monday and Tuesday tournaments to see what's winning, what's doing well, and that is going to influence their deck list decision.
I'm wondering how quickly they will be posting the win deck lists. Because if they don't post win deck lists until the following Monday or 2 days later, you could see the same deck winning every single day. Theoretically.
Or people
not having the data to make adjustments. So I'm hoping that they'll give it to us like daily, but like I don't expect them to give it to us daily, even if it's automated pretty much. Someone still has to hit the button to post it live. So thinking about what came out of this last weekend of green and black, and we also had four other win-in deck lists over the weekend and bigger events. We had a Pioneer Challenge on Magic Online. We had a Pioneer PTQ on Magic Online. We had a PTQ that happened at the Invitational, and then the winning deck list itself from the Invitational, which was mono black. So the Pioneer Challenge was like dominated. Actually, it was a lot more. It was not as dominated as it was week before by mono green, but out of the Pioneer Challenge also came mono black as the winner.
Top four is all mono black.
It was all mono black, yeah. Which is like, I don't know. Maybe the deck is too good for the format. We'll give it a week of PTQ in and see what happens. Or maybe, I mean, that'd be interesting if they banned something on Monday, which I don't think they would, because I'm guessing there's going to be no PTQ Pioneer bans next week, because there's a PTQ literally happening during the announcement.
They announced that they're planning on not doing any bans. However, if they feel like some new information comes to light and it's really drastic, then they'll ban, but it's not like, the threshold's a little bit higher for this Monday than it was for the previous Mondays.
Okay, so they preempted the announcement pretty much of it not happening. Or
there's going to be an announcement. Yeah. It'd have to be like, they go like, oh, it's completely untenable, the meta right now, and everyone's going to play the same deck for them to announce a ban sort of deal.
That's good to know. And then... The PTQ on Moto was at least won by Bant, Field of the Dead, with Hour of Promise. And we'll tweet out all these deck lists on our Twitter. But I think the Bant deck itself, I mean, we can run through it right now. I think it has a lot of good tools. Kellen, do you think the Mono Black matchup is still favored for Mono Black in this matchup?
I think you're favored if you have enough discard spells in your board. Matchups like this, I tend to leave in my Murderous Riders just in case they bring in something like Lyra Dawnbringer. So I just take out Fatal Pushes, and you want to have I want to have four good cards to bring in roughly. And if you look at this, looking at the sideboard of the winning deck, they can bring in Lyra and Oko's. But that all died to Murderous Rider. And I've even gone as far as bringing in Noxious Grasp if I feel like they have way too many targets.
Noxious Grasp has both of those.
Yeah, no, that does seem like a good call.
Yeah, Noxious Grasp. Yeah, because a lot of times their cyber plans are like, I'm going to get cute and play these Planeswalkers or creatures that like will dominate you. And then you're like, well, I left in a 2-mana removal spell that kills your 5-6-mana threat. And then you gain a huge tempo swing and it's really rough on them. And then once you also have the discard on top of that, including Rankle, because they have Arboreal Grazer, it's pretty easy to disrupt one aspect of their game plan, either the removal spell, either the sweepers or the ramp, whichever one, it depends on how their draw's developing. And honestly, that's usually enough to put you slightly ahead. I don't really think you're favored on the draw, but I think it's one of those matches where you're slightly more favored on the play than you are behind on the draw.
One key aspect to this deck is the four Supreme Verdict. And, you know, we see some of the decks blue-white are kind of anchored by the four Supreme Verdict. How susceptible do you think the Mono Black deck is to being Supreme Verdict, or do you think it's not really an issue with the amount of discard that you have?
I'm more scared of Hour of Promise, Grow Spiral, Arboreal Grazer than I am a Supreme Verdict. If they draw just ramp, I think I'm more likely to lose than if they draw four Supreme Verdict, if that answers your question.
Okay.
Our guys come back. We have Smuggler's Copter and Mutaball. We have discard to like let us know about the sweeper so we don't overcommit.
Mm-hmm.
It's pretty easy to navigate around a sweeper that doesn't exile your creatures out of mono black, but the ramp is just a race. And believe me, once they ramp into like Sphinx's Revelation, it can be pretty tough to like get out of that spot.
I saw Chris playing against this deck in the top 8 at some point, I believe. And the guy, or maybe leading up to the top 8, and the guy brought in Rest in Peace, which seems good in combination with their Wrath effects.
Yes and no. Yes, you're correct in that it's good with the Wrath effects, but no, you can't bring it in.
Don't bring it against Mon Black?
Yeah, it's like good, but again, you're more likely to win the, like, there's a Scavenger Grounds in this deck, right? Looks like the PTQ winning list doesn't have one.
But that guy that he played against definitely had one, I think. Or at least I saw...
Dylan did have a Scavenger's Grounds. Yeah, so the Rest in Peace looks nice because it turns off Bloodsoaked Champion and Scrap Heap Scavenger. But then, like, when you actually play the games, you realize Mono Black has enough natural card advantage from, like, Castle Lockthwain and stuff like that. I mean, it's mostly Castle Lockthwain. That's really tough to just be using a card to not allow one or two guys to come back. You're not Dredge. You're not getting, like, 6 to 8 cards of value. You're getting, like, 1 to 2 off of your graveyard interactions. And a 1-for-1 trade that sometimes works, sometimes doesn't. Especially against a deck that has so much hand hate as Mono Black does, it can be really rough to bring in a card that doesn't directly doesn't progress your own game plan or stop your opponent's game plan directly. It only stops your opponent's game plan indirectly, and I don't think that's good enough. Out of Blue-White Control, because they take so long to win, I think it's fine. Out of this Banfield deck, I think it has to stay in your board.
That's a good point. I noticed they also have Cellar Wreckage, and I also noticed that Martin Mueller also had Cellar Wreckage in his main deck, actually, in the Invitational. How easy or with Mono Black is it to play around Cellar Wreckage?
Out of the ban, against the Bant Field deck, against like the controlling decks, you can sometimes wait until you get a discard spell. Play the discard spell, see if they sell, then attack. Against Martin Mueller is playing more of a flash deck, right?
Yeah.
With Avacyn.
Yeah, he was.
Yeah. Against those decks, it's a little more tricky, but on the other hand, they don't have this dominant late game either. So against them, you don't want to have as much discard in, although, like, I brought in Duress against my Blue-White Flash opponent because they were bringing in way too many Wraths. And you can kind of like time your spot based on that, but you can also just be a little less aggressive against them because unless they're like resolving Gideons and stuff, you have more late game card advantage than they do off of, again, Castle Lockthwain and the fact that Murderous Riders kill a creature, get a dude. Those small advantages add up, so you can play things pretty passively. And eventually you'll win the game because they need to resolve a Gideon to really pull ahead. And if they don't, and if you answer, it's even not that big a deal. It's like, if you just take things cautiously, you have the tools to beat them over the course of a long game. They're the aggro deck in the matchup, not you. And so you can play around it in a way that you can't with Banfield or Blue-White Control because the aggro deck is against them, if that makes sense.
Totally. So just... have to play. And then I saw the Invitational was won by a guy I know pretty well from Opens and Grand Prix, Alex Hahn, playing Mono Green. Deck that was 1-2 in that PTQ. Todd Anderson taking another second place.
So it's interesting, Kellen. You think that this deck is Stone unplayable?
I might have been exaggerating a little bit. I think if people play Blight Beetle, you can't play the deck. I guess people aren't playing Blight Beetle. At the Invitational, it can be tough because there's card availability issues. So even if you learn, like, oh, this is a good sideboard tech, you're stuck in the middle of Roanoke. You might not be able to actually get your hands on the cards that you want to play.
Yeah.
I know, like, everybody was posting Vivian Reed. I need a not Vivian Reed. That's a, they actually probably could find that better than Vivian Arcbow.
Yeah, it's tough to get your hands on that card. And I don't think there's any Blight Beetles for sale in any of the vendors there. Again, I might be wrong, just in my experiences, if you just put four Blight Beetle on a deck that can cast it and like you have a functional deck, you can mulligan down to five for your Blight Beetle, and it's just like Stony Silence against Affinity. It's like that level of hate card against mono green. Again, difference against scales, but there's just like this super powerful hate card, and as long as you go like, all right, I play this, and then how do I win? And how do I win can be Rankle. Rankle's enough to be like, all right, they can't beat Rankle. And that's just going to clock them in the air because they're not going to be able to kill it, because the biggest creature they can play in their main deck is a 2-2 if they don't get +1/+1 counters. And so Vivian doesn't kill Rankle. And once Vivian doesn't kill Rankle, like, how are they ever supposed to win? I guess they can Nissa and then Vivian. But you see the sort of like steps you need to go through in order to kill it. It's not trivial. It's not
easy. Yeah.
And since you have access to out of black decks, you'll probably have Noxious Grasp. It's also difficult to keep your Planeswalkers alive. Especially because the mono green deck's kind of full of air once you don't have access to the pluses from Vivian, Voracious Hydra, or Walking Ballista. So you kind of have to do weird stuff to win the game.
Right, you can be stuck in a position where you're top decking basically blanks and Burning Tree Emissary or elves or, you know, other Nykthoses or castles, whatever it may be.
Yep, exactly. The lands aren't bad because you're not even ramping into anything except Nissa is the only like big spell that does anything. I might be wrong on like how good I know Blight Beetle's that insane against Mono Green Devotion. I might be wrong in the sustain how good Mono Green is against anyone who's not playing the card, but I also think just normal old black decks with access to Thoughtseize and Fatal Push can actually play a game against the deck. I know Alex went to Shaper's Sanctuary as a replacement for Veil of Summer, which can be problematic, but I started seeing some of the like more controlling blue-black decks go to Perilous Vault. Which Ooh. Is a pretty nice, yeah. Perilous Vault was a nice one and a
that
real.
That seems nice.
Wow. Yeah.
Perilous Vault's the 4-mana artifact sweeper.
It's an O stone that exiles, right?
Yes.
But it costs 4 to play and 5 to pop.
Yeah, I played that at my very first Pro Tour. It was actually pretty good, but I was bad. I did poorly in drafts, so I didn't make day 2. But yeah, it's like the only playable black sweeper, even though it's not black, if that makes sense.
Languish isn't really playable, right?
Yeah, Languish, whenever you don't kill something off of Languish, it's like you lose the game. And unless you're playing stuff like your own Scarab Gods or your own Kalitas that you pumped up, your guys have to survive Languish in order for Languish to be playable. So if you're like playing a Sea Drino deck, I think Languish would be fine. But if you're just playing a control deck, I don't think you want to be playing that card. And, yeah, that's basically that on that.
Interesting.
Shaper Sanctuary good against Mono Black?
I don't think so.
I'm going to be real. I've been playing, like I said, I've been playing a decent amount of the red-green deck. And I was playing against a lot of Mono Black the last few days. And I noticed that Shaper Sanctuary it was fine, but not really doing it. I mean, the card I was most happy with out of the red-green sideboard was actually Scavenging Ooze. I thought Scavenging Ooze actually did a decent amount of work in that matchup. But other than that, yeah, I was underwhelmed with Shaper Sanctuary.
Yeah, it's good if your opponent is a true control deck, but they need to be not white-blue because white-blue doesn't have enough targeted removal. So they have to be a true control deck that's black. And I think there's a possibility for a good deck like that to appear. Or I guess, is it Phoenix also runs way too much targeted removal?
It's very good against Phoenix, yeah.
Yeah. So one of those two decks, I think it's very good against. And I don't think it's... Like, the issue is that if you played against Mono Black Aggro and they're just sort of like, oh, I drew a bunch of creatures and Blight Beetle. It's like, oh, I spent a card and didn't do anything. And then they're like, I'm just going to... Like, when I was playing against Mono Green, if I had Blight Beetle in play, I actively avoided casting any removal spells that could hit Planeswalkers on the creatures because I knew the only way I would lose was to their Planeswalkers. So I just sandbagged it, would take my hits in, eventually draw something to play, and then like make sure they didn't keep a Nissa on board. And that was all I needed to do. So I don't think Shaper Sanctuary is what you want to be doing against the Mono Black Aggro deck.
One of the cards in the sideboard that I personally been a fan of, as the formats continue to progress, is Questing Beast. And I have just found this card to be very useful, especially against the Field of Ruin decks and against the other aggro decks, as kind of a way to make it so you're kind of winning as far as the racing goes, because, you know, it's obviously Vigilance and Death Touch, so it can, you know, block very efficiently. You can get around all the small creatures. I mean, what do you both think? Because that's one of the cards that kind of jumps out to me, is I may want more Questing Beasts on this side.
So last week I was playing Jeskai Fires, and Questing Beast was probably the scariest card I could see out of Ghoul when I played against it. I think Questing Beast is just a very strong like creature like in general for the format. Like Cullen talked about the 2-drop slot being quite bad in this format, and when the green decks are going 1, 3, 4, it skips the 2-drop slot anyway, and it can, on the play, Questing Beast can put enough pressure on you, and the green-red deck, like with Embercleave and things like that, it's quite good.
Yeah, I agree. I think Questing Beast is... I'd have to think about it more. I think it's the best aggro 4-drop in the format, maybe. I think it's better than Rankle. I just like the fact that Rankle's black. I think it might just be the best aggro 4-drop because it's a hate piece against Nexus. It's a card that pressures through zombies out of...
Yeah, it beats Fog, decks. Right?
Yeah.
Yeah, it beats Fog, and it combos well with all the ways there are to give trample in this format, like Vivian, Embercleave, and my favorite, Gore Clan Rampager. The Death Touch Trample combo is very relevant for getting people dead.
ABCs of aggro, always be cleaving.
Yeah. But even in this like mono green shell instead of like the green red shell, you still have a way to give a trample.
Oh, yeah, certainly.
Yeah. So it's relevant no matter what.
I think that's all that we really have to say for the deck list. So why don't we kind of move into the last segment in our show, which is usually our hot takes, or kind of like the future looking forward. So Slater, if you already have one lined up, and Kellen, if you already have one that you can think of, then by all means go ahead.
My hot take for next week's PTQs is Dredge will win one of them. I think right. Dredge is a underdeveloped archetype coming into this week, but I think the deck has a lot of tools that are just really good against like the field decks and like the field dead decks and the green black decks and like the decks that are trying to beat these aggro decks. I think the Dredge decks are quite good unless we see, as we mentioned earlier, an uptick in Anger of the Gods and Cry decks. I also think, and I 4-1 the last two leagues I played with the deck, blue-black Scarab God. I think Scarab God is just a very, very powerful, like, I think most of the gods are powerful, but Scarab God is, like, a dominated standard portion, and it really hasn't seen a lot of play in Pioneer yet. And with these creature deck, like, my build right now is, like, more mid-range, and I had like 2-3 like Death Touch Life Link. They're just like the Aetherborn is like super good against like mono black and mono red. It can get fatal push, but it can also come back later as a 4-4 Death Touch Life Link. And I think the Scarab blue black decks in general have a lot of tools that can fight against the aggro decks, and also are decent against the green decks. Because I think Drown in Filth is a really underplayed card in both Pioneer and Standard.
Yeah, definitely. That makes a lot of sense. Kellen, do you have any immediate thing you can think of as hot takes for the format week leading into the PTQ?
Sure. So this is, I guess with hot take, I'm allowed to say something that I'm not like 100% sure on, right?
Right.
Sure.
Okay. I think the PTQs are going to be dictated by Field of the Dead decks. I think Field of the Dead and Hour of Promise is the best thing you can be doing in Pioneer right now. I think it's better than the Devotion Shells. I think it's better than like Mono Black Aggro in like the abstract, even though I might like how a Thoughtseize aggressive deck lines up against it. And I think whatever the best build of, if you have the best build of Field of the Dead coming into one of these PTQs, you're going to be favored to win.
Seems like a pretty intelligent take, because I think Oliver Chet like filled it with Field of the Dead, green black Field of the Dead at the Invitational, and I'm not sure if that's the best tuned deck, but I'm sure that they put a lot of time into it. And
Them and Sam Black, I believe, both worked on the deck.
Those are two powerful minds, so I'd probably start there if I was to be playing green black field.
And I think Bant's also quite good as well. I don't have a strong opinion on which one of those two is better, or if it turns out there might be like a third different way to build the deck that I'm not aware of. But either way, it's I don't really know of an endgame that goes over the top of the Field of the Dead decks. It seems like, no, if your opponent's playing field, they're going to win eventually. And so if you can just find a deck that has the tools in order to get you through the early and mid game, you're just going to inevitably win given enough turns. And there's Field of Ruin in the format, but since the mana bases are all kind of bad, I don't really like playing Field of Ruin in most of these decks. And so I think it makes more sense to be on the proactive side of that equation, playing Field of the Dead. And with a deck like the green-black field deck that Autumn played, I think they actually do have the tools to beat the aggro decks. And then you don't really need tools to be able to beat mid-range control. Your mana base does it for you. They had Abrupt Decay and Gilded Goose to gain life. They seem pretty well set up. I'm not sure if that's the right way to go, but I think you want to be doing the best Field of the Dead deck if you want to win these PTQs.
That's another card I had in my blue-black mid-range deck was Field of Ruin. Maybe I didn't have it in the list I sent you earlier, but I'm going to definitely play Field of Ruin. I think blue-black can support it quite well.
You can. It's still tough because they have Hour of Promise to find their 4 Field of the Dead, and if you put 4 Field of Ruin in a deck where you want to play Gifted Aetherborn on turn 2 and to be a 2-color deck, that's a real cost that they just don't have to accept because they... it's easier to support Field of the Dead in their deck than is Field of Ruin in yours, if that makes sense.
Yeah, do you think I can play Unmoored Ego before they can go off?
Oh, 100%. The green-black field deck isn't a ramp deck. It's a mid-range deck that has this unbeatable late game.
That's good. Because Unmoored Ego, the more that we know about the format, the more we obviously can predict things to fight what we need to answer.
Yeah, the flip side of that is, you know how I said they're a mid-range deck that just has 4 Field of the Dead to beat you going along? That also means that they can win the game pretty easily without field thanks to their 4 trackers. And plentiful thought seizes and spot removal.
Awesome.
That's fair.
So kind of going into a less developed, less intelligent hot take. One deck that I am going to just shoot out there, shoot my shot that I think is going to win one of the PTQs. I mean, there's like a billion of them. So, I mean, one of them's got to win. It's got to win one of them, right? Is I actually really like the look and the play of the blue-red artifacts deck that Noah Walker played to a top eight finish. Now, the kind of reason why I haven't been touching this deck initially in the format is because I wasn't a huge fan of some of the cards they were playing. I really thought they were kind of loose. I really think where Noah's deck is at, you know, in the top eight, and to a certain extent, even Rich Cali's deck, who I believe he plays 16th in the tournament, I really like where they have the deck, and I actually think it has a good mix of aggression plus the little bit of disruption with the Metallic Rebukes that you can kind of get around a little bit of what the different control and field decks are doing. So this is a deck that I'm probably going to be looking to play that I'm excited about.
It's a strong deck, and it's nice that, like, it takes four hits to kill someone. Five's a good number to be at, especially on turn two.
Yeah, I've been playing a lot of games against it, and I just noticed that they have a lot of ways to kind of chip in damage between Whirl of Rogue and Wild Slash, and being able to put Ghostfire Blade on either a Copter or a Gingerbread, and then once you get down to either 5 or 10, they'll just shrapnel blast you out of the game. And being able to almost steal wins in a sort of way is something that I'm certainly a fan of.
Yeah, and the fact that so many of their threats have evasion is exactly the sort of thing you need to be thinking about. Again, when I think the best mid-range decks are going to have a very large number of 2-2 zombies, you're just not going to get in on the ground, and that deck has answers to that.
Yep, and certainly if you think that, you know, one of the cards that I've been really happy with the addition of in this deck is the Hopi Gearper. I really think that does a lot to kind of...
It's Time Walk. I heard someone call it Time Walk, and that makes a lot of sense.
I mean, yeah, essentially. That's why, you know, I've played Affinity for years on this point, and that's kind of the reason why some people play it in their sideboards, is because it doesn't really matter what your opponent does. The only thing you need them to do next turn is to not Wrath you. And if you hit them with Gear Parade the Grid, make it so they can't Wrath you, that's the only thing that matters.
And I also noticed that, I mean, this deck feels like it's like Kaladesh Block, but it has like some super great tools that Kaladesh Block didn't have, like the scissors.
Gingerbread!
Hope of Garapair was Kaladesh Block though, right?
Yeah.
This deck just like has a lot of tools that come from like one of the most powerful sets we've had in Standard in the last 5 years. And the Shrapnel Blast, I saw, like, when it was on camera, it just, like, ended games faster than anything else in the format.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so thanks again, Kellen, for joining us on the podcast. It was great having you, getting your thoughts on the format and your experience from the Star City Invitational last weekend. Congrats on a great finish again. And then... next week is Thanksgiving, so we won't be having a podcast next week. And a lot of you will be playing the PTQs and hopefully doing very well in them. And I'm not exactly sure how much information we'll have until the following week. So we'll have a ton of information to digest over turkey and all the other food and football and Black Friday shopping and things like that. Get your Pioneer cards wherever you go for your local game store or wherever else. And then... we'll be back the following week with tons of more information and maybe bans from all the information that we get from the PTQs. So follow us on Twitter at PunditsCast. And then also follow us on Spotify or iTunes or wherever you listen to us. Hey, Kellen, again, where can the viewers find you and learn more about the deck list that you're playing?
So I have a Twitter account at TheOddEngineer. And I usually tweet out the deck list I'm playing for an event a couple days before and what I've been thinking about testing going into the event as well, if I'm actually testing for an event.
And do you have any big events coming up in the meantime?
Nope. I actually have none until next year.
Pretty much the same here. So it's going to be a nice couple holiday breaks. A lot of changes to the format, and can't wait to be back here. So again, we'll see you in 2 weeks. Have a good Thanksgiving.
Later, everyone.